podcast.
My Michelle Live. My Michelle Live. Sports timeout. The fans, the field, the faith, the fun. Here's Michelle.
Yes, I am. Hey, sports fans, and maybe yet to be sports fans, and those of you who are curious, we are here, My Michelle Live, and today we're going to be taking on the sports stories of the week. Ladies and gentlemen, it is time for sports!
Let me introduce you
to the round table of fellas joining us today. We have with us our very own sports encyclopedia. He is the author of Thunder Sports Network. He is, I should say, co-author. He is a veteran sports reporter from the Seattle area, Rich Hallstrom.
Encyclopedia Rich.
Right on. And then we have with us pastor, chaplain, coach, player, the reverend of all sports, Garrick Pang. Get ready to get Pang.
Get ready to get
Woo! And we have with us Joshua McMillan, the Wookiee of the Year.
Wookiee of the Year, Josh McMillan.
And of course, he is a photographer and author. In fact, yeah, see that moon behind him? He took that. He made that. It was cool. He's the author of, where's my book? It's right here. I got to grab it, guys, because it's
Breaking
a real
yesterday.
Good one. Here we are. There we go.
Breaking Yesterday.
Breaking yes. Yesterday. Woo. Pick It Up, Sci-Fi at Its Best. Brent R.
Author,
Baker.
Author, photographer, Brent R. Baker.
I am your team leader, Michelle Mendoza.
Don't stand too close. She may put out your eye with a gleam of her smile. Here's Michelle.
Yes, I am. All right, guys, as we sports it up today, welcome to all of you and welcome to the weekend. This is kind of like how we herald the weekend, isn't it? With a little bit of sports.
Yeah. It wouldn't be the weekend without sports.
It's right. It wouldn't be. But I'm gonna go big here.
Hey, a year ago we weren't even having weekends because we weren't having sports.
That's right. We weren't having anything. One long, extended, boring weekend, and now we've got so much to talk about, including something else that was put off from 2020, and that is the Olympics. The Summer Olympics are going to begin, if I am right, a Friday, July 23rd. So we're a little over a month away.
If they still have volunteers.
Yeah, if they still have people that are going to help. There's a lot going on with the Olympics. People still concerned about COVID. Nearly 10,000 volunteers dropped out of the Tokyo Olympics. I mean, this is recent stuff, guys. So, you know, what are the Olympics are going to look like this year? And is it really well worth it, Josh?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it's still going to happen. It's just, it's difficult because the Olympics on a good day are a logistical nightmare. Getting all these people from all over the world together, getting them all put up, getting all the fans from everywhere together. I mean, it's difficult, but you know they're going to find a way to do it. It's already been delayed. People are going to want to get this done. I mean, look, even here in Washington, we're set to fully open up in June. So I think that a lot of the fear is starting to go away. People are kind of getting over it. I mean, even people that have been very extra about the whole scenario are kind of like, oh my gosh, I can't wait to see people's faces again. I think we're over it. You know, we're past it in a lot of senses. And there is some fear lingering, but I think by the time we get there, we're going to find people that are going to want to work on it. And people are hungry for sports. We know people want it, so it's going to happen.
Yeah, but what about all of these people dropping out? I mean, is it fear over COVID still?
It is, Michelle. Because, and I can speak from the perspective of the Asian community, and I am a part of the Asian community, but I don't class myself kind of in that same light. And many of my Asian friends and people that I know are still highly, highly afraid. As a culture, they tend to be very cautious, the Asian community.
They were wearing masks before they were cool. You guys were all over the mask before they were cool.
Still wearing them now that they're uncool again.
Yeah.
I have to tell you something really cool, though. I did go and pick up our newest family member last weekend in
Share the baby. Washington. Okay. He's sleeping, but I'm going to wake him up. There he goes.
The show has officially gone to the dogs.
Oh, my God. That's just ridiculous. You cannot just listen to this. You cannot just read the transcript. You have to see this fluffy mess of adorable cuteness. It's ridiculous. What's his name?
His name is Cloud. He is my 12-year-old son. Saved money for almost a year in order to get this dog. He mowed lawns. He cut trees. He did all this stuff. But anyhow, my point is that I went to Eastern Washington and over to Idaho to pick up this dog, and it was amazing. People weren't wearing masks, and I could see faces and smiles. And I will tell you, it was so refreshing, and it was just like, oh my goodness. It gave me some sense of hope, like the world might return.
Might
at some
return
point.
To normal. And this in the wake of Fauci's emails that were released, and one of the things that he mentioned in his emails, store-bought masks aren't going to stop the virus. You know, the virus gets through it. And yet, here we are. We've all been wearing masks. People freak out over masks. There's Karen mask shamers. And we're competing in sports much of the time with masks. You see people out there in mask playing in the fields, and it's really crazy. I don't know how people do it. I cannot walk through a store without going, I need air. I don't know if I'm just a wimp or what. And now we have, as you said, the Asian community and the Asian countries still a fear of COVID. And I'm not going to diss anyone if they have a legitimate fear, Brent, but how is this going to affect the Olympics with all these people from differing places coming together? If you're worried about the pandemic, that is scary. I'm not gonna lie.
Not only that, but you were talking about the different cultural responses to this, and like Garrick was saying how, or even you said that many in the Asian communities, other Asian countries are wearing, you know, we're already in the habit of wearing masks at different times.
Yeah, and then you've got Texans totally showing up to the Olympics going,
we have different, not only people coming from all over the world to this place, but you're going to have all of these different sensibilities mixed together too. And so it'll be really interesting to see how it plays out, obviously in competition, but more so is like, what are the dynamics in the Olympic villages going to be like? And what are we going to hear about the different athletes' experiences there as you have different people from different Olympic teams mixing together? Cause I know Olympic Village often turns into a big social club in many ways, healthy and unhealthy, and what that's going to look like this time is going to be from a distance. It'll be really fascinating to see. I think some of the athletes may choose not to come. I think others, it will see how considerate they are of other cultures and how they view it when they come in. And others are probably just going to go their own way. But I predict that there's going to be some waves in that regard that might be, we're hearing about more than the actual competitions.
This won't be the typical Olympics, Rich.
Mm-hmm. Definitely won't be the typical Olympics. Right now, Japan has only 2-3% of their population vaccinated against COVID-19. 80% of the athletes are said to going to be vaccinated by the time the Olympics roll around. These 10,000 volunteers won't only affect the Olympics. That also affects the Paralympics, because the same group of volunteers work at both events. To give you a good estimate of what happens here, volunteers make events like this run. For example, in 2000 in Sydney, they had 40,000 volunteers at a cost of $60 million. So helping the volunteers be part of this event, they really make this event go. So I think there's going to be a little strain on the volunteers that remain, And it's going to be interesting to see how the Tokyo Olympic Committee and Paralympic Committee and all the host committees that go into that deal with this, because they've spent over $15 billion and only $6.7 billion of those dollars are not public funds. So a lot is riding on this right now for the Tokyo 2020 Olympics. So it's going to be an interesting puzzle.
Yeah. That's a lot of money to spend on this. I mean, it's just a lot of money, but you know, it is the Olympics. But in the midst of the Olympics, I did want to mention just a couple of crazy stories. And one of these is an Olympic story. Another, is out of the Olympics, but both dealing with anti-doping violations. A reigning Olympic gold medalist from the United States, she's a hurdler, Brianna McNeil, is facing a 5-year ban for anti-doping. And then outside of the Olympics, yet more Kentucky Derby drama. Someone's got to give me an update because I haven't followed up on this. Medina Spirit's second Kentucky Derby post-race drug test was positive for steroids, according to a lawyer. I mean, what's the real standing? And do we know who the winner is? And there's a lot of drama, a lot of drugs.
Can I do the really shortened version? Because please, there's a lot of medical words in there, and I don't want to pronounce medical words on a Friday afternoon. It could get very complicated. Anyway, lawyers for Bob Baffert and lawyers for the Kentucky Derby and all the parties concerned. The first drug test wasn't good enough, so we had to go get a second drug test. And as we found out, there's a very small amount of a steroid in that drug test, but the drug test tested positive once again. So two positive tests. Bob Baffert is banned for 2 years from Churchill Downs. The next step is Medina Spirit probably will be disqualified as the winner of this year's Kentucky Derby. So that's where we stand. The short Reader's Digest version, another bad look for the sport of horse racing.
Wow. So a lot of drugs going on. Sorry about that.
Didn't he pass a drug test in order to be able to run in the Preakness?
Yes, he did. He passed, but that's another test for another race. And this is another one of the ideas, Garrick, that Bob Baffert is putting forth. Was UC Davis lab who tested specifically for the steroid, but Bob Baffert's contention and his lawyer's contention is that the steroid was part of an ointment that was inadvertently used for a skin rash. So let me give you the simple version of this. Bob Baffert and his lawyers are saying that we didn't intentionally mean to put that steroid in the horse's body, that it was part of the ointment, but it was not a major part of the ointment. So that is part of the wrangling back and forth. Once again, I am not a doctor and I don't play one on TV or the radio, but that's all I can do for you right now.
Well, there's also the story about the stable boy peeing in the horse's hay too. That
oh my gosh!
Well, that was round.
Me?
That was round.
That was round one.
Yeah, yes, sir.
No, that was one of the
conspiracy theories.
Conspiracy theories, yes.
Brent, I got a question.
Because all those stable boys are always loading up on steroids.
I've got a question for you. If you write another science fiction book, is that going to be a storyline in there? You're going to borrow from that storyline?
Oh, I'll have to think about that. That's pretty good.
I think Josh needs to weigh in on this.
I don't know, man.
Come on, Wookie, where are you?
I've just enjoyed seeing the ridiculousness that's come out of it. And a lot of people have said, like, you know, this guy, maybe he had the benefit of the doubt the first time. And maybe even the second time, people were like, okay, you know, maybe that could happen. Not. But at this point, he's so deep in this that you're like, all right, now, can we stop the pretense? I feel like it's over. It's done. you did this. You're trying to come up with excuses for it. No one believes you after the, you know, fourth and fifth time that you've gone through this. So yeah, it's ridiculous.
Well, there we are. It is ridiculous. Something else that I think is ridiculous, I want to go over to tennis, is that Naomi Osaka has now withdrawn from the French Open. If you remember last week, we were talking about how she was maybe going to get consideration for these press conferences because they ask hard questions and it's distracting to me and I don't like it. And it was kind of snowflakey. I'm sorry if you disagree, but I think it's kind of snowflakey. So now she's just like, this is too much. I'm done. Interesting story.
Well, I don't know too much of her background or her story, but I mean, I think it's good that she actually pulled out in the sense that if this was really too much stress for her, then probably she has no business being there. I shouldn't be quite so strong in her.
You should stop it. Gosh, yes, we're placating to snowflakes. Yes. If you can't take it, don't play. You know, this is for the big people. Right. You know, you don't like it. I'm glad you're talented, but go teach, you know, like toddlers how to play tennis. You know, invest in the next generation. Do something rewarding for you. You know, I'm not going to placate and say I'm sorry anymore. Look, if it's too much, don't do it. There you go.
No, I think
I'm
right.
Sassy today.
Well, actually, I think it's kind of what we were talking about last week a bit. It's like, okay, so granted, the media is known to misbehave, and granted, being in these press conferences can be difficult. But you are a high level professional athlete. And stress in stressful situations are things that you have to learn to adapt to and deal with just in the process of playing. You're sitting out there for 4 hours and it's 90 degrees and you got, well, when pre-COVID area anyway, you had 15,000 people trying to be quiet while you're playing and not always succeeding, which is kind of, that bothers me too. You can't put up with a little noise, but anyway, enough with tennis snowflake commentary. But anyway, I do think that I do think that if the press conference is that difficult, that withdrawing is a good decision. I mean, and I am not going to mock her for mental health issues because that is something very serious that needs to be taken care of. Very serious. And so the two to me can't go together.
That's a good question.
You're playing as a professional athlete on the big stage and then disappear.
Go ahead, Josh.
This is something that I've actually been debating a lot with people on Twitter about, because in my view, this comes with the territory. This is part of the job. And a lot of people say, well, we don't pay for the interviews. You know, as fans, we're paying to go to the events. Like, well, that's not true. If you look at those, look how many people with salaried jobs are sitting in that room asking questions. You know, we have an entire market built around this. And yeah, I agree. If she has mental health issues that this is not contributing to, she should step away. And, you know, maybe there's a conversation to be had of do we actually need to have this kind of society and marketplace of reporters who are, you know, hanging on every word and asking every question about every detail in lives when players more than ever can interact directly. And maybe there's conversations to be had about that. But for now, this is part of the job. This is where a lot of the money comes from. It comes from the sponsorship deals, which come because you have exposure, which come because people see you in those interviews wearing your Under Armour or your Nike or whatever it may be. You know, I may not like having a one-on-one meeting with my boss every other week or something like that. Or I might not like having to get on meetings with customers, you know, like having to talk to execs. You know, I might not like that. Maybe that's bad for my mental health, but it's expected of me in my job. And I can't do my job without doing that. And these people are making a lot more money than me to do that. So I, you know, if you have mental health problems, I feel for you. But at the same time, I'm not going to say that, well, yeah, you just don't have to do that. You can make the conversation, say, hey, I think we don't need to do this anymore, that maybe we should change the way we do things. But I'm not going to say that, like, nah, it's fine. You know, just skirt the expectations. If you want to fight that battle, but don't tell me that it's not part of the job right now, not something that is expected of you right now as your job, just like it's expected of me to do plenty of things in my job I might not like.
The Wookiee is special.
Michelle, what's happening here is two issues are combining into one, and we need to separate both issues and discuss them separately. Mental health issues is different from doing press conferences. Like Josh said, mm-hmm. it's part of your job as a professional athlete because you don't mind those press conferences when you're promoting your book that you want to sell lots of copies of, or you don't mind doing interviews for the Sports Timeout podcast if you want to sell your book or your autobiography or whatever it is. So you can't pick and choose.
Can't pick and choose
what press events you want to do.
Unless
but
you're
second
Marshawn.
Of all, Naomi Osaka is worth $55.2 million. So I think that she can be a responsible adult and she can get the professional help that she needs, which is the right thing to do. So her pulling out was the right thing to do in order to get those things taken care of from a mental health perspective. But
so are we really dealing with a mental health issue here?
I think that she definitely has a mental health issue as far as stress. And she said she was dealing with depression, but I think that her connecting that to a press conference is a little bit far-fetched.
Okay, maybe it is, but see, well, I guess what I'm asking here is, has there been a documented mental health issue, or are we talking about the mental health issue of I'm a Gen Zer and I don't like anything that stresses me out? I mean, come on, we see it all over the media. We see it all over social media. You know, well, you said something I don't like. I can't stand this negativity. This negativity is just wrong. I don't like it.
I'm not going to put that on her. That's how she's going to, you know, I don't know her situation.
Well, that's what all I'm asking. First of all, Josh, do we know that now? And if we know that, you are darn right. It's a different issue, and mental health issues should be addressed separately. Josh, go ahead.
And that's one of the big things here is people are, like Rich said, confusing all of these issues together. You know, even when I was talking to people about Twitter, I was saying exactly what I said now. And they're like, oh, so you're saying that you think that women should have to answer ridiculous questions like this. It's like, no, I never said that. You know, the press should be held to their own standard.
But you know what? People ask tough and weird questions all the time. Yeah, women should be asked those ridiculous questions. And we should say, yeah, I'm not answering that. You're an idiot. That's fine to say. We are not snowflakes. Women shouldn't have to be pandered to. I'm the girl on this panel, and I'm going to speak up for women. Ask me stupid questions, and I'll tell you, you're asking a stupid question. Next.
Well, come on. But that's it, though. It's confusing the issue. Just because I think that people should have to answer questions. I said all world-class athletes I was talking about. I'm not talking about just women or just Osaka. You know, I'm talking about all athletes. This is their job for almost every major athlete. You know, this is an expectation for major athletes in the world. And just because I mentioned that in regards to this issue doesn't mean I'm talking about all women. Doesn't mean I'm talking about just Naomi Osaka. Doesn't mean that I'm getting like trying to say that, oh no, she definitely doesn't have any mental health. She's just, you know, a Zoomer or whatever, you know, like there's all these issues that are getting conflated into one. And they're separate issues that need to be tackled separately. Does the industry need a change? I don't know. Maybe. Does mental health need to be? But again, these are separate issues.
Yes, they are.
We cannot tackle together cohesively.
And that's why when we can't focus in on those. If there is a mental health issue, we need to think about accommodations. We need to think of how we can help people do their job. Or if you can't do your job, if I have a mental health or a physical ailment, you know, Rich, you're in a wheelchair most of the time. There are some jobs that you cannot physically do. You are
correct, ma'am.
So, and based on that, are you lodging complaints? Are you suing? No. Are there jobs that you can do and do really well? Heck yes. Are there sometimes not enough accommodations for the jobs that you can do for wheelchair access? Yeah. We were at an XFL and I'm pushing Rich across the wet grass going, okay, come on, people.
Well, let me talk about that for a second, because I've actually been to the Paralympics as a reporter, and there were some serious accommodation issues and accessibility issues
at the Paralympics
in Greece in 2004. Yeah, because most of the world isn't handling this very capably. In a lot of areas of the world, I would have to crawl on the ground to get somewhere.
That's not okay.
And see, there are different ways in different cultures of looking at people with disabilities. And I don't want to get far afield of our topic here, but in a lot of countries, some people with disabilities are looked at as, if we want to look at it from a spiritual perspective, demon possessed, or there is hidden sin in their lives, so on
second
and so forth.
Class citizens.
Very, 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 very unbiblical ideas.
Oh, yeah.
But when it comes to accommodations, we're kind of talking off specific sports, but I think this is really important. A story that comes out of Ohio was a high school football coach. Coaches, they were fired. They were fired after a player said he was forced to eat pork. So basically what happened, this kid had kind of a shoulder, didn't feel real well. So he sat out of multiple voluntary practices. So as kind of a punishment, he was forced to sit in the middle of, imagine a gymnasium. And so he's sitting in the very middle of the court, and he was forced to eat an entire pizza. Well, he happens to be a member and his family of the Hebrew Israelite religious faith, and they don't eat pork. So this pepperoni pizza, not okay. He picked off all of the pepperoni, but there's still residue there. Now the coach has said, hey, we offered the team chicken nuggets instead of pepperoni, but the player chose to take off the pepperoni and eat the pizza. Now all of those coaches are fired. The family's going to sue. But is that an example of not being able to, I don't know, swing with the times and accommodate people for realistic, I'm talking realistic accommodations? Anyone?
Well, Let's get Brent real quick. Go ahead, Brent.
As someone who's coached high school kids, there's all kinds of wrong that comes out of that for me. First of all, voluntary workouts. So where's the voluntary part of that? If there is a kid that's being singled out and placed in the center of a gym and basically being hazed.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's exactly what it is. Hazed.
That's what that is. And that's done by the coaches, not by the other kids.
Although I'm going to say, you could say it's hazed, but if I were a high school kid and I got a whole pizza to myself, I'd sit in the middle and be okay, bring it.
So,
but I get you.
I get that. And secondly, you know, I think it's vague what actually happened with the pizza. I mean, if the kid knew that it's a high school kid, so he's not like totally ignorant that there might still be residue on the pizza or not, and he still ate it. I think there's a little bit of responsibility there for him. It's like, if he had options or not, did he feel like he had the option to refuse? That's a good question there. If he felt like his position on the team is in danger, that sort of thing.
And that's all up to the coaches to not have that type of environment.
Exactly.
Because a voluntary workout is a voluntary workout. These are not professional athletes getting paid to show up to training camp. And this is also a violation of the kids' the players' religious beliefs. Shows no respect on that. On that,
we're
level.
Understanding. So, that's well, kind
it,
maybe.
See, I think what's yeah, and I think that's where it's gray here is I don't know how much they understood that, and if the kid pointed out, hey, I'm not supposed to eat this because of what I believe.
That's
if,
what makes
know, if he's unclear about that, then there's a little bit on him too. But I think that the environment that the coach has set, where they're punishing kids for not participating in voluntary workouts and singling them out. And this
okay,
is football,
that part's
so there's
not
going to be
okay,
a lot, a big group of kids.
Yeah. Let's bring up something else, though, as well, that now the parents are saying, now we're going to sue the school district. You know, I'm wondering where we have lost, and I don't know the ins and outs, and I'm not going to blame the parents and say they're doing something wrong, but I'm going to say, where is that learning moment and saying, you know, this is our faith, this is our belief, and use this as a moment to say, look, this is not okay. We go right to, oh, we're gonna sue, we're gonna bring you down. We need to have a little bit more understanding in some of these cases. Am I wrong here?
You're asking a good question.
Yeah, I'd like to know what the conversations were that led up to this. Yeah. I mean, was that their initial knee-jerk response was like they're immediately going to turn around and sue because this happened? Or was there a process that was gone through and they've just gotten to a point where they don't feel like they've been heard?
I can't imagine that if everyone's already been fired. I mean, fired. You
there's
know,
a
you
lot
think,
of facts missing
do
that we
there
don't
are.
Know about. But, right. some, but I, there I would are some, say,
go ahead.
Well, I agree with you both, Brent and Michelle. I mean, absolutely. And Rich, when you were talking about these volunteer practices, so that's one level. But when it comes to, it sounds like from what you read, Michelle, that he was given the option of having chicken nuggets and he chose pizza. And so if he chose pizza, and even though there may have been residue on there, he would know that, or he should know that. And so for the parents to come in after the fact, when your child, and granted, he's not 18 yet, so he's not an adult, but this morphs over to a whole nother topic that I don't want to go too far down this other rabbit trail. But in terms of schools vaccinating kids who, you know, if you're 13 years old without parents' consent and those types of things. I mean, so there are implications on what can be done and what children have control over.
Yeah, or feel they have control over. Moving along to another story that has to do with sensitivity and growing in sports and in life. And this one is humongous, people. This is huge. The NFL is going to stop what they call race norming. And they're going to be looking at a bunch of claims in the $1 billion concession range. Here's what's going on. There's been more than 2,000 NFL former players that have retired that have filed dementia claims based on I'm getting my head knocked, you know, a little too much. Fewer than 600 have received awards. The claims were subject to what's called race norming. What is race norming? This is huge. Turn up your computers. This is crazy. It's a practice that assumes Black claimants start with lower cognitive functions than white and other non-Blacks, which makes it harder for them to qualify for a payout. This is based on old laws, old school stuff. When race issues,
like 1990s.
Yeah, you know, like Margaret Sanger, Planned Parenthood, sterilization. Well, it isn't, but based on you know where we're at today, you know, we have Margaret Sanger and Planned Parenthood and let's sterilize everyone and abort all the and get rid of all the Blacks and they're an inferior race. Crazy. Because we're all the same race. It's called human. But nonetheless, this is nuts. Josh, you've been quiet for a second. Stop it. Do. Wookie, where are you?
He's Josh? Muted.
There we go. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, we can hear you now.
All right.
See, we knocked him out with our diatribe.
It's easier to be quiet when you're muted.
It is. I know. It's a weird concept. No, this is something I've talked a lot about because I think it is one of the more ridiculous things that we run into today is the assumption that people are worse or better based on the color of their skin. You know, people are worse or better, not based on that, but based on many, many other things that doesn't have to deal with the level of melanin in their skin. It's the new racism that we face in this day and age. And I hate it. It's the most ridiculous thing in the world to me. People have a lot of different things that they go through, right? And there are people that have a leg up in life, the young people that got to start off life going to a really good school, having a really stable family, having a good home that they lived in their entire lives. And there's people that don't. And that is not based on skin color. Okay, maybe it affects one skin color more than others, but the skin color is not the determining factor there. Mm-hmm. It's everything else that they're going through that is the determining factor there, whether or not they had a father that stayed around, you know, or if their father left and never came back, went to the store for scratchies and milk or whatever the story is for a lot of people out there. Those are the factors that affect them. And again, not the color of their skin. We should never discriminate against things based on the color of skin. I use this analogy a lot. If you are needing open heart surgery, do you care what the person looks like, or do you care that they're the best at what they do? You know, you shouldn't care what they, you know, what color their skin is, you know, what their eyes look like, if they're blue or brown or whatever. You shouldn't care because you care that they're the best.
Once you open up the patient, you're not going to be able to tell either.
Exactly. Whoever's lying on the table. Exactly. The heart looks the same. I mean, maybe it looks a little different if you have a disease or something, but, you know, we're all humans.
Right.
And what we see on the outside
for yourself
is nothing, you know, in the grand scheme of things.
This race norming policy should have never been followed by the NFL for even one second.
No, well, and it's just
it came down to what they could get away with. I think it came down to what they could get away with. I think they probably proposed this, and at the time, the NFL players or the NFL owners were predominantly white, and so they were trying to avoid paying out on some of these lawsuits, and so they were able to get this somehow in a crazy way accepted. And so you're going to take what you can get, but it's going to come back to bite them.
Well, this has nothing to do. I hope it has nothing to do with science. It has nothing to do with science.
Let me beg to differ with you for just a moment, Rich. These things were based on stupid science of the day, which is exactly why
Fauci science,
which is exactly why you don't use that term. Settled science. Come on, Fauci science. Oh,
yeah. I'm wondering. You said it. You went there. I mean, even. Again, this stuff, I mean, it was based on some pretty shaky science from the 90s. But I'm like, even in the 90s, it's not like we're talking about 1870.
You're right. What,
I mean, their team of lawyers, the NFL's lawyers that were involved in this, they all should go down for malpractice because there's no way that was going to stand
them.
Forever.
It should cost them big time. I'm sorry. There is no room for that. That is absolutely ridiculous. Rich, did you see? Take a look at your buddy sitting next to you on the Zoom thing there. Garrick?
I'm Lady
with
Justice.
His blinders on. Oh my gosh. Hey, Josh, I think it's time for you to take us in a whole nother direction. It's time to talk a little bit of baseball. That's right. My oh my.
I don't believe it. Love me my baseball. And you know what? The Mariners have really come back to form. You know, they had that 6-game skid where we were all like, all right, well, here it is. This is where we were dealing with it. But, you know, hey, lots of injuries. You know, it seems like every other year the Mariners have this injury bug that just devastates us. But here we are. We're come back. We've had some good wins. And we see the bats really starting to come around. One that I'm particularly excited about is JP Crawford. One, because I love the way the guy plays the game. I love the energy that he brings every time he hits the field. And seeing his bat come around is really what I've been hoping for. You know, I know that there's a lot of really good shortstops hitting the free agent market after this year. And a lot of people would like us to go after one of them. But I keep saying, like, you know, as J.P. Crawford's a young guy, just recently he hit that 1,000th at-bat mark, and he's really started to hit since then. And he has gold glove defense. He has the ability to be an everyday shortstop for you defensively, and now we're seeing that offensively. So I'm really excited to see that come around. One thing, gosh, and I love Shannon Dreyer mentioned this in one of the post-game conferences. People were booing Jared Kelnick out there. Mariners fans were booing Jared Kelnick. He has not hit well since he came up, but you know what? He is a young player. And just because you put unrealistic expectations on a young player coming up for the first time into the big leagues does not mean that that is something that you should boo. Not in our home park. It's ridiculous.
I'm sure that's going to help him hit better too, right?
Yeah, no, right?
Right.
That's been one of the, I've said
just
this
grip
a
that
bunch
bat
of times
tighter.
This year too.
Just grip that bat tighter.
Been very, press
out.
What the heck
Very
is wrong
frustrated.
With people like that, though? I mean, you know, I don't get that.
COVID
get
brain.
That. Yeah. I don't know.
No, it's a past Mariner ownership brain.
Yeah, true. True.
No, and
the ghost
again,
of Dustin Ackley.
Patience with this team. I know that it's been 20 years since they did something exciting. Trust me. I know. But that doesn't mean that they've been rebuilding for 20 years. People are getting tired of the rebuilds. Like, it's been going on for 20. No, it hasn't. Jerry DePoto hasn't been here that long. He came in, he inherited a system and a team that was, frankly, not very good.
Jack Zarenzik was a fool.
He really did.
Tell us how you really feel, Rich.
In this organization.
What happened to a Jack we trust?
Jack we do not trust.
Yeah.
Jack we do not trust. He, again, did a number on this organization and this farm system, which has now.
They had no farm system, Josh.
Well, exactly. Under Jerry DePoto, this has gone from one of the worst farm systems in the league to a top five farm system in the
and
league.
And I'm going to give you guys who are listening across the world and the country a little insight into, you know, Josh has a passion, obviously, for the Seattle Mariners. But, you know, for us up here, we go to a game not expecting that that they're going to win it. So when they do, we're pleasantly surprised.
Well,
and it hasn't been
a
bad year. Hasn't been.
They
a bad
had
year.
A 5-2 homestand, Michelle. We got to give it to them. And then last night they go on a first game of a 10-game road trip, Josh, and they do well against the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim, win 6-2. Looks like a great team effort.
I was there Saturday. They won over Texas, so that was kind of cool. Nick Castellanos was saying that he doesn't care about the cheating epidemic and doesn't have much faith in the crackdown. You know, we were talking about drugging. We were talking about the Olympics, the horse racing, cheating. And, you know, there's cheating in baseball. You know, gosh, when you make it big business, when you make it your all, you're willing to do anything, and the ends justifies the means. And
unfortunately,
that does steal away from America's game, even though we've debated whether baseball is really America's game anymore.
Oh,
or
let's not do that this week, Michelle.
Let's not do that this week. Let's go to soccer. I want to go to soccer. I may be the only one in the group here. Did anyone else watch the U.S. men's national team over Honduras? Hello? Anyone?
Crickets.
Yeah, where's the cricket sound effects? We need the crickets.
Hey, we haven't talked about cricket yet.
Cricket. We haven't talked about cricket. Well, they did have a 1-0 win in the last minute of the game. There was a late header goal from a substitute, Jordan. Now, help me say his name. Sabachu? Is that how you say his name?
Bless you.
Let's go with it.
Thank you. It was his first goal for the team. It was like, I don't know, 2 minutes left to play. So that was great. Although Honduras is not no slam Honduras, but they're not really a power player in the whole national team playing field, but we will take the win. That was great. In the United States here, MLS standings has my team at the tippy top of not only the Western Conference, but the Supporter Shield. Thank you very much. That happens to be the Seattle Sounders. Let's get the Seattle Sounders hat. Let's just do that because they deserve that. Thank you very much. Although their last couple of games, I haven't been like overly impressed. I'm pretty stoked that my team's up there.
Well, you have to give it. I'll just take it the other way, Michelle. You have to give it to Austin FC to come into Lumen Field against the Sounders, the best organization in the league, and come out with a tie. You're an expansion team. It just shows the improvement overall of Major League Soccer, and that's what Major League Soccer needs is continuous improvement on all fronts.
Yeah, indeed. So that's been pretty nice. I know, is it New England that's chasing our heels there, but Seattle Sounders, that's pretty good.
I enjoyed seeing Freddie Montero start the game on Sunday. And he always has such a great work rate and gets back on defense as well as you know, scoring those goals, which I think maybe that he should have had that goal. It looked to me like it went off the defender, therefore invalidating the offsides call. But
you know, honestly,
but they had video review.
I don't know. So. Yeah, they do. But
hey, can I ask a general soccer question here?
Sure. Yeah. Let's do it.
So, I mean, I love my soccer, but I'm not into it quite the way Michelle and Garrick are. But how do you measure and define work rate? How, because I've seen that as a stat, but I kind of get what it might mean. But how is that quantified?
Well, measuring and defining it, I think is I'm not quite sure how they do that. But you can definitely see it on the pitch. You know, the players who are, I mean. Players like Ladero and Jordan Morris, when they are forward, well, Ladero's not a forward, but someone like Jordan Morris, who's a forward, and then you see him in the box defending, chasing someone all the way down, all the way to the back. I mean, it's that type of thing. You had probably our best examples of work rate were Ozzie Alonso, and I mean, it was great for Christian Roldan to be able to play under him, because I see a lot of Ozzie in Christian, and no, I mean, Christian's a great player in his own right, but having played under him, I think it had a great effect and impact on his ability and the way that he plays.
Intervene here. And someone who's viewing us right now said that they measure miles or kilometers run.
Okay, that makes sense.
So there you go. Also, if we're going to go to the peanut gallery, mentioning that Mexico, I believe it was versus Costa Rica, they scored 5-4 on PKs. Pretty amazing game that was. Soccer's been a really good thing for me, and you've mentioned it, Brent. Maybe Garrick and I pay attention to soccer a little more than anyone else on this roundtable, but it's been great for me as we've been coming alive. I noticed that MLS, they were wearing what Adidas put out as the Prime Blue jerseys made from recycled ocean plastic. Those were gorgeous, by the way. Home teams wore the
stolen
blue ones.
Stolen from the Miami Dolphins.
The away teams
stolen
were wearing
the
white
mouth
ones.
Of Dolphins.
Yeah. And this is Pride Month. MLS is releasing a jersey honoring the LGBTQ community. They were only worn before matches, interestingly enough. So it's funny because we complain here about, come on, keep the politics out of sports. But, you know, they are recycled plastic, take care of the oceans. We care. You know, the lines really can be blurred, can't they?
The lines are blurred, crossed, faded, slanted, any term that you want to use, Michelle, unfortunately.
Everything's political. So.
Well, I think these types of things are positive ways to engage. You guys have heard me enough just saying, you know, let's keep politics out, or if you want to allow politics, then allow it all. None of this selective garbage of what happens to be.
Yeah, that's going to happen on social media too.
And I don't know if you heard, I mean, again, here's another tangent, but like our embassy at, you know, where the Vatican City is, they're flying the Pride flag. And I'm like, what? You know, and it's not that I have anything against the Pride flag, but this is an, it's not designed to be a political statement. This is representing our nation. And President Trump had banned any political flags to be flown aside from the U.S. flag on any embassy. And I think that's how it should be. And so
otherwise we get into, well, my flag should be there and this flag should be there. And they've taken, I don't know if you know, the Christian flag. When I was in vacation Bible school as a little girl, you know, they have little vacation Bible schools for a week at differing churches, and they always had, you salute the Bible, you know, I pledge allegiance to the Bible, God's holy word, I will make it a lamp unto my feet, a light into my path, hide its word in my heart. And you would salute the American flag, you'd salute the Christian flag. I pledge allegiance to the Christian flag and to the Savior, to whose kingdom it stands, all of that. You know, they teach you all of that. Well, a lot of places are banning the Christian flag. I don't know, it's racist or, you know, it's disclusive. You know what? Fine. If you want to just wave the American flag because we're Americans, okay. But it goes to Garrick's point. We see it on social media. We see it in sports. Selective outrage and selective celebration. It is ridiculous. And why a lot of us have kind of lost the luster. I love football. I've told you guys, my daddy always taught me football is life, Jesus is life, not necessarily in that order. And, you know, football has always been it for me. You know, I'm always watching, right? It has lost its luster in the NFL since all of the politics, all of the kneeling. I just got tired of it. And so, you know, while I'm excited to talk a little bit about football, and by the way, USFL is relaunching in 2022. And do not forget, Josh, you're excited about this. XFL is set to return in 2022 as well. And the XFL,
there's
the Christian flag. The XFL in particular kind of steered away from the controversial subjects. They didn't have cheerleaders that were, you know, dressed kind of, you know, well, you know, where that's kind of the focus, you know, I mean, because that can be not as family friendly to a degree. They were very proudly displaying the flag. There wasn't all of the politics. So, you know, maybe that's part of the reason why the XFL was on a trajectory to really make it. We liked it. I loved it. Yeah.
Oh, it's going to be a battle between the XFL and the USFL for that spring football market, because the USFL does have a history and they made great waves, provided Jim Kelly with an opportunity to play. Steve Young got his start at the LA Express.
Okay.
So it's going to be a battle for that spring football dollar, because that market is out there. Football is
XFL. USFL, who's going to make it?
Well, I don't know. I can't predict, but I'm going to root for the XFL. I mean, what are you bringing back a 25-year dead league for? What the heck's that? I liked the XFL because
first
of all, it didn't make any bones about being a direct competitor to the NFL, which the XFL tried to do back in the day. The XFL, whether you want to call it a developmental league or a last chance league, it was different. And it was different in, I think, the way you had access to some of the players. I mean, I remember Brock Huard, like, interviewing guys as they come off the, like during the game and that kind of stuff that you won't see in the NFL. And I think rightfully so. But I think it's just the way that minor league baseball is much more accessible to fans. It's more affordable. You can sit there outside the bullpen and chat with players during the game and that kind of stuff. I think the XFL has more of that kind of appeal. So I want to root for it for that reason.
All right. I think Garrick.
I don't think they're mutually exclusive. I'm just going to say, I think there's a lot of football money to be had in having more football out there. That's not just the NFL.
Okay.
And I think that there's a lot of fans that would love to go to football games that can't afford it because it's incredibly expensive to go to a football game these days.
Yeah.
And the XFL made a point to get into a lot of markets that want a football team. St. Louis, you know, they lost the Rams. They had some of the biggest turnout every week.
Mm-hmm. I think they actually lost two football teams because if you think about it, they lost the St. Louis Cardinals and they also lost the Rams. Yeah. So
I will have to say, I love the coaches being mic'd. That's really cool. But
if you've got Jim Zorn, but if you got some of the other guys, it's kind of like a bleep or bleep moment.
A little bit colorful. But I think that it's challenging, however. I mean, with both the USFL and the XFL, when you've been watching NFL and then you switch over, because you have this expectation of excellence and the ways that, you know, these players, I mean, you almost get spoiled because it's like, well, of course they should catch that pass. Of course the quarterback should make that connection.
Do you feel that way when you watch college sports?
Well, not as much. No. Yeah. I think it's true.
Now, wait a minute, Garrett. You got to be honest. If your team gets blown out by 3 touchdowns, you want to see him. You want to see him play a whole lot better.
Oh, absolutely. No, I'm not arguing with that. It's just that when you, and this is why I'm saying, I think this is why these leagues are maybe have a little bit of a challenge because yes, you can get a ticket cheaper, but it's not the same.
Well, it's a different game.
I think understanding it's a different game.
Well, I think that's the challenge because it's
something at the level of a college or a Canadian,
the expectation is that it's going to be a pro league.
Yeah. So, if you watch the Canadian Football League, which many people don't, but in the early days of ESPN, sometimes that was how they filled programming and you had to watch it all the time. But if you watch something like the Canadian Football League, you get a more another level.
That's pro football.
It's pro football, but it's not NFL football. It's better than, I mean, it may not be better than, say, play, you know, an SEC game, but for most college football, it is going to be a higher level of play. And I think that's what, you know, what you'll see with the XFL and the USFL is you'll see, again, these are still guys that are probably in the second, say the 50th to 75th percentile of college players who maybe aren't good enough to make it in the NFL or are marginal NFL players, but they still got some football left in them. And I think you'll see guys, you will see, I think more guys playing because they still love the game as opposed to guys that have to play because they have to finish out their $50 million contract or they're playing for their next contract. You know, and you guys that are playing for their football lives, there is a hunger there that you don't always see at the NFL level.
And the USFL and the CFL have produced NFL players in the past.
Like you know,
the US, definitely. But we all know that the reason Warren Moon had to go to Canada is because nobody wanted a black starting quarterback in the NFL.
Yeah.
And anybody who tries to challenge me on that, we can have a great debate on this show. So if there's anybody out there that would like to challenge me on that fact, let's go for it. you know, CFL and USFL have both produced players for the NFL. USFL, Herschel Walker, Steve Young, like I mentioned, Sam Mills, linebacker for the New Orleans Saints for a number of years. Jim Mora got his coaching start with the Philadelphia Stars and then transferred over to the New Orleans Saints and was the New Orleans Saints' first coach to ever take them to the playoffs, and he started in the USFL. So you got to use the alternate leagues as a springboard to something greater. Michelle?
Well, guys, we are about out of time. Any other football or sports related stories you want to bring up before we go to our final shot?
My only one would be the discussion around Julio Jones going on out there. Don't get me wrong. I love Julio Jones as a player, but please do not.
We don't need him.
Picks for him.
These Seahawks don't need him.
Receiving core.
Yeah.
And he has a huge contract that would just weigh us down. If we're going to talk about bringing in a veteran that's, you know, on the back nine of his career like that, there's a guy out there right now. His name is Larry Fitzgerald, who's not on contract anywhere. If you want to bring in that kind of guy, you know, that can be that, bring him in, you know, if you have to. But even then, don't. You know, we have John Ursua out there, who I am really excited to actually see play football.
You just want a trip to Hawaii, man. I'm convinced of that. You just want a trip to Hawaii.
Hey, I'm not going to say no to a trip to Hawaii, but have you seen John Ursua play football? I mean, he has that movement that not many people have, or he moves like a cat. You know, I want to see him out there on the field. And we have other guys that I would like to see more of a chance for them as well. We don't need it. We got top two. We have the best, by the numbers, we have the best receiving duo in our conference. And we have one of the toughest conferences in all of football. And arguably one of the top five receiving duos in all of football. So please. Please, please, please do not go out there and get Julio Jones.
All right, Josh, tell us what you really think, right? We really have that problem in this roundtable. We need to be a little more forthcoming, I'm thinking. Maybe we'll work on that, guys.
Fauci science.
That cracked me up. It's time for our final shot. I'm going to press the button and nothing. You know, I go button.
Final shot.
Final shot. We go around the round table. Everyone just gives a shout out, a thought, as something of that nature. Brent R. Baker, it is time for you.
Author, photographer, Brent R. Baker.
TJ Olson, right. Who is the son of the recently retired Greg Olson, who played for the Seahawks last year. He's been awaiting a heart for a transplant.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
They found a donor for him. So just praying that everything goes well with that surgery. He's 8 years old. So
amen.
Yeah.
Amen there. Let's go to
Encyclopedia Rich.
Encyclopedia Rich.
Well, I got to say this, even though I'm a big Carolina lover, I got to say this from along with my co-author in crime, Chris Brown, we got to say, congratulations to Duke Blue Devils head coach Mike Krzyzewski. He's going to coach one more season, and then his former player John Shire, his number one assistant, is going to take over at the reins of Duke. He's been coaching Krzyzewski since 1980 at Duke. 41 number one draft choices or potential lottery picks during his time. Coached USA basketball to multiple gold medals. Probably the best coach in our lifetime in college basketball, guys.
There you go. Our final shot from
Rookie of the Year, Josh McMillan.
Of the Year.
Yeah, my final shot, I'm going to go back to baseball. Shout out to Taylor Trammell, Jake Fraley, two guys that have come back from being Jake Fraley from injury, Taylor Trammell being sent down back to AAA and coming back and showing that, you know what, we do deserve to be here. Taylor Trammell especially is one that, man, he's just a great guy. Every time you hear him speak, you want to root for the kid. So I'm glad he came up, hit a home run the other night, is playing well. Hope that he finds success here. And I hope that he finds a long-term home in Seattle, because I love that guy.
Okay. I'm going to give my final shot to Matt Stutzman. If you haven't heard of Matt Stutzman, we'll pay more attention. He was born in Kentucky, and he was born without arms. He loved sports, so he played basketball using his feet, for crying out loud, but he figured, I can't make the big league. So he focused on archery. In London, in the Paralympics in 2012, Matt placed silver for the USA. And so I am rooting for Matt in the upcoming Summer Paralympics in Tokyo. The armless archer is going for the gold. And I am behind him all the way. So go, Matt Stutzman. I'll be rooting for you. Yahoo. Let's go to Garrick Payne.
Get ready to get...
I'm going to give it to the Mariners, the whole team, because now you guys all in the beginning of the season, you were all dissing on me because you were saying, oh, no, the Mariners aren't going to do that great this year because we don't have a bullpen. And our bullpen has struggled from time to time. And you didn't think that we're going to make the playoffs. I'm still thinking that we're going to make the playoffs.
Whoa. Okay.
Yep. I'm going out on a limb.
Chance. There's a chance.
88 and 74.
One in a million. Yeah. But anyway, I who knows about that? But I've just really, really enjoyed watching the Mariners because it once upon a time, and Seattle baseball fans will all know this. I mean, you could count on blowing leads. You could count on never wondering. Did someone just yawn? Yeah, I think that was maybe well-timed. But
that was the Mariners offense from 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Well, and that was the thing. But they've just bounced back, as you were saying, Rich, earlier. And it's just been fun to watch them. And I'm excited for the team. And especially, guys who have come back off of injury, like you mentioned, yeah. Josh. And Kyle Lewis, being one of those two. And it's just, I've really enjoyed watching the Mariners this year.
Well, I have enjoyed hanging out with you guys today. Always an absolute pleasure. If you are kind of new, well, check out our other podcasts and make sure you go to My Michelle Live because we have some great products. There's a couple of guys here on our roundtable that have beards. So let's give a shout out to Real Bearded Men.
Get lost in his forest. Citrus pine beard oil.
From Real Bearded Men. At mymichellelive.com.
That's right. You get the best deal there at mymichellelive.com. So you can go like us, share us wherever you're listening, even just give a little comment. Whatever you do, it really helps us to grow because My Michelle Live is more than just sharing news stories and talking. We like to get to the God story and share a deeper story, a deeper story of hope that the world really needs right now. It goes beyond politics. It goes beyond what side of the aisle you may sit on or what team you're rooting for. It goes to the bigger win. And that's the win that comes from knowing Jesus Christ is your Lord, your Savior, your hope, your salvation. It changes everything. And that's what we're really all about. So thank you for joining us today. And we will catch you next week when our roundtable will take on sports once again. Thanks, guys, for joining me today.
Thank you,
thanks, Michelle.
On time.
I'm pressing the button. Nothing's happening. Keep talking amongst yourselves while Michelle figures. Ah, there it is. Come on. It's time for the weekend. I'm just saying.
Hey, if we get the week,
more SciTech Talk at MyMichelleLive.com.
The recording has stopped.
Oh, I got to head off. Have a good one.
All right. Thanks, Josh. Bye, guys. Good to see you.